Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode number 499. 499, just one more episode to go before number 500, because that's how numbers work, isn't it? 498, 499, and then, wow, 500, and that's a big round number. And we like to celebrate big round numbers, don't we? Yes, we do. To be honest, I'm not sure when I will manage to publish episode 500, because, as you know, my wife might give birth to our baby daughter any day now, and then I'll be rather busy with all of that, I expect. Lots of things are happening, but never mind all of that now, let's not get ahead of ourselves. This is episode 499, and this one is all about the royal family, and you'll hear me having a rambling chat with Amber all about Prince Harry getting engaged to Meghan Markle, some old rumours, gossip and scandals about the royal family, some royal history, and also there's a royal family quiz in this episode. That's all coming up in this one. But before we get into all of that, let me mention the sponsor for this episode, and that's iTalkie. With my episodes, you get plenty of language input, listening practice, natural vocabulary, and so on. But it's important to activate your English too, of course. So try using iTalkie to actually practice speaking to qualified teachers and native speakers who can give you guidance and feedback to help you in your learning journey. So get some lessons on iTalkie for yourself, or if you celebrate Christmas, you could consider offering some iTalkie lessons to a friend as a gift. And remember that you can get a free lesson from iTalkie because you listen to this podcast. And to get that, you need to use my link, and that is teacherluke.co.uk/talk, or you can just click an iTalkie logo on my website. You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. Okay, so hello, folks. Here we go with another new episode. This one's about the royal family. Now, you probably know that recently we had the news that Prince Harry is going to marry his gorgeous girlfriend, Meghan Markle. I don't know if that made the news where you are. Did you know about that? I think probably the royal family, the British royal family, is, I know it's famous around the world. I don't know if it makes the headlines in your country. I wouldn't be surprised if it did, because it's quite a big story. Certainly in the UK, it's a huge story. So there's going to be another royal wedding next year. And this is actually quite a big deal for the UK and other countries too, which have a certain fascination with the UK's royal family. Now, you might be wondering what British people think about this. What do we think about Harry and Meghan? And what do we think of the royal family in general? Well, I can't ask every single British person what they think, but I can give you my opinions and also the opinions of Amber, who I'm talking to in this episode. Also, this gives us an opportunity to chat generally about the royal family on the podcast again. I say again because I have talked about the royals a little bit. I did an episode all about the Queen a few years ago, and also there was that episode called something like a totally terrific talk on the terrace. And we talked about Lady Diana and the Queen a bit in that episode as well. But anyway, this basically gives us a chance to chat about the royal family and stuff like that. And that's usually a subject which attracts quite a lot of attention and interest from abroad. So hopefully you'll find it an interesting topic. Also in this episode, Amber and I have prepared some quiz questions about the royal family, and I wonder if you know the answers. So first you will get a discussion of Harry and Meghan, and then a royal family quiz. And let's see how much you know about the royals, and hopefully this episode can help you to learn a few things about the British monarchy that you didn't know before, including some scandals, some rumours, some big moments in history, and other interesting facts about this most traditional of British institutions. Hello, Amber. How are you today?
I'm good, Luke. How are you?
Very well, thanks. Where are we?
We're at my flat.
Okay.
We're surrounded by Christmas sabilia.
Sabilia?
Christmas sabilia, is that a word?
Christmas, what, like memorabilia?
Yeah.
Are there any other words that use abilia at the end?
I don't know any, no.
Well done for just introducing a brand new word right at the beginning. All my listeners are going, what's this word that we must learn? No, don't
learn it.
Don't bother with that one.
No.
Christmas abilia, like memorabilia is stuff. Well, we have to explain this now. What's memorabilia?
Bits and bobs, like souvenirs and things of...
It's like stuff that helps you remember, not things like holidays you've been on, but usually it's stuff like Beatles memorabilia is like, yeah, you know, things associated with the Beatles. Like it could be newspaper cutouts or maybe a Beatles Christmas record or like a Beatles poster or things like that. It's Beatles memorabilia, like stuff that people might buy or sell that is that helps you remember the Beatles.
Or an event. Couldn't you have like, because jumping straight into our theme of the day,
yeah,
like the royal wedding, yeah, memorabilia.
Yes, memorabilia from the royal wedding. Yeah. Did you have any in your house from the royal wedding of Prince Charles and Lady Diana?
No. We're not a royal family.
I'm
so sorry. My flat is so noisy. You can hear like the sirens outside. I live next to a hospital and my neighbour is like drilling or something. Can you hear it?
Yeah, your neighbour's drilling. I don't know if that's coming through in the podcast, if people can hear that.
It's very loud.
It sounds like a long extended fart coming from the next room. That's kind of what it sounds like to me. And it makes the floor vibrate as well.
Yeah, it's intense drilling.
Yeah, some really intense drilling and siren action going on outside. Memorabilia is basically, let's just wrap this up and move on.
Sorry.
It's objects kept or collected because of their associations with memorable people or events.
Okay.
So, for example, the royal family memorabilia is a good one because maybe your family aren't into royal stuff. My family aren't really either, but for some reason we did have a dish or a plate from the royal wedding in 1981. It was 1981, I think, between Charles and Diana.
Possibly.
Because that was kind of a big event in the UK. And I remember, I was 4 at the time, but I remember actually it being on TV. And I remember there was a party in the street that day. There was a big street party with bunting, you know, like little flags that they hang from the...
British people love bunting.
We do, don't we?
When there is an event becomes a party with bunting.
Yeah. It's not a proper event until there's bunting.
I've got loads of bunting.
Have you? You've got kind of bunting up here as a Christmas decoration.
Yeah, well, this is my advent calendar that I made.
We need to just make sure the listeners know what bunting is.
Okay.
Where do you see bunting?
Any sort of fete or party or just celebratory event in Britain, like bunting.
Street parties for a royal wedding or something. And it's usually like string that's hung from, like it might be string from someone's rooftop that goes onto a lamppost, and then, you know, string that's hanging in the air. And then there are like these triangular kind of flags that hang down from the string.
Exactly.
And so it's like a line of triangles that sort of swing in the breeze, and they're of different colours. So that's bunting. Yeah.
Exactly.
Your advent calendar, which is an advent calendar, as any listener who heard our Christmas ramble from last year. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
We talked about everything.
Yeah, we did talk about last year. We learned all about your family traditions and it inspired me. I wanted to have traditions like that.
Yeah, you need to do some family games at Christmas as well.
Yeah.
But anyway, an advent calendar is like a calendar that runs down to Christmas Day, and usually you give it to kids. And normally you open a door for each day, and behind the door there's like a bit of chocolate or something. But your advent calendar is amazing. It's like bunting, ladies and gentlemen. But instead of little flags, there are brown paper bags hanging from clips on this string, which is suspended from the cupboards here in Amber's living room, and for each day there's a different bag, and there must be some sort of little goodie or treat in each bag.
There is a goodie and treat in each bag, because I don't like those advent calendars with mouldy old chocolate and just marketed at children lots of plastic. So in these advent calendars there is a little chocolate, but good chocolate from Marks and Spencer's.
Oh, yes.
And there's Christmas decorations in some of them, because we don't actually have many Christmas decorations because we didn't really, you know, really get into it before we had our son. Yeah. And then in some of them, there are little gifts. So, for example, there is a whoopee cushion. We were just talking Ooh. About farting. And my son, he does enjoy farting.
He enjoys farting.
He loves a fart. Really? He loves to mention it.
Oh,
he can't just let one slip quietly. He'll run and find me. Mummy, I did a fart.
So he has to tell you.
Oh, yeah.
I heard a joke the other day. Do you want to hear my joke?
Obviously.
Why do farts smell?
I don't know.
So that deaf people can enjoy them too. Right.
Amazing.
So your son likes to flag up every time he's done a fart. He runs and proudly tells you, I did a fart.
Yep. He can also tell me if other people have farted.
Oh, yeah? Like, as if you need to know.
Yeah. He might run in and tell me, Mummy, Daddy did a fart.
What, is he impressed or is he shocked? Or
I think he just enjoys... come on, you're a guy. Guys, yeah. Even grown-up men enjoy a fart.
It's. I mean, I have to say there is something quite funny about a fart. I mean, you know, the... See, as I'm saying this, I'm aware that I do have someone who comments on my website, who you might know. Jack from the comments section.
I do know Jack.
He's got an obsession with farts. I mean, he's
taken it too far.
Literally obsessed, and I mean obsessed with farting. And he, apropos of nothing, will post videos and photos of people farting on the front page of my website.
Well, I mean, it's funny because it's a childish thing to find funny.
Yes.
And yet at the same time, there is a fascination with farting. I read or saw recently about, in my research for Paris, about this show where this guy would musically fart. And I think they had some sort of loudspeaker attached to his bottom, and it was this sort of old-fashioned black and white. I'll try and find it and send
farting
it to you.
Farting a melody.
Farting a melody, yes. Okay. And just very long farts, and the audience were just like, wow.
Queuing up to come and see it. Well, yeah. You know, I also enjoy a comical fart every now and then. I try not to do it in polite company, but I mean, when a fart happens, I do find it amusing. Not I don't laugh at my own farts, but a fart in itself is quite a funny thing. But not necessarily on the front page of my website. That's...
No, I don't find it that funny. I must admit, I've often been baffled as to why people find them as humorous as they are. However, for a three-year-old, pretty funny. That's
yes.
Whoopee cushion. So
wait, a whoopee cushion is?
A whoopee cushion is like a little cushion that you fill up with air, and then when you sit on it, accidentally or otherwise, you know, if you've hidden it under someone's seat, it makes a farting noise.
Yeah, you kind of put one on your teacher's chair or something like that.
Precisely.
And the teacher sits down and a little farting noise. Hilarious.
Yes.
Okay. All right, but for three-year-olds, not for grown-ups.
No.
Okay, so there's a whoopee cushion in one of those.
There's a whoopee cushion. There's like decorations. There's a few little figurines that he likes. He likes PJ masks, and I've got him one of those. What else are there? There were some colouring pencils and some colouring things. So stuff like that.
It's fantastic. It's just the best Christmas ever. It's amazing. All right, cool. He must be excited. Is he getting excited?
He loves it. But I told him if he tries to take any of them down before the day, because that's what he wants to do, they'll all disappear because the elf will come and take them back.
Yeah, because you've also, as you pointed out to me earlier on, you have an elf in your apartment, in your flat.
Yeah.
There's an elf that's here, and there's even a little door on the skirting board,
yeah.
Listeners. It's a tiny little door. It's probably about, I don't know, 15 centimetres high, little door attached to the skirting board, which is just the little bit of wood that goes around the bottom of the wall, you know, the level of the floor. And there is a little door with a couple of mushrooms growing next to it.
Yeah.
And this is the elf's door, is it?
Because there's this tradition in England, I don't know how long it's existed, not when I was little, called Elf on the Shelf. Do you know this?
Never heard of Elf on the Shelf.
Elf on the Shelf is pretty weird, but it's big in the UK, and it's this sort of weird little elf snitch. And the story is...
Snitch,
yeah. What? Because basically this Elf on the Shelf is a kind of a marketing ploy, I suppose. I don't know who started it or how, but you have a little toy elf, And the idea is that it comes and it watches the children and it reports back to Santa to say if they've been good or bad.
Right. And the snitch is if the kid's been bad.
Yeah.
So the elf will be like, oh, this kid did a fart and didn't tell anyone. So no gifts for him.
Exactly. Blamed it on the dog.
Or blamed it on the dog. Yeah. Okay.
So this is the elf. But the thing is, the elf on the shelf gets up to naughtiness. So what you're meant to do is at night when the children are asleep, you do something naughty like spilling things or drawing faces on the fruit or stuff like that. That's the kind of sort of naughtiness that mm-hmm. the elf on the shelf gets up to. But I find the elf a bit disturbing. But I like the idea of an elf getting involved and mm-hmm. making the sort of lead up to Christmas a bit more exciting. So instead, I've made him a door so the elf appears at night and he has done naughty things. He stuck a giraffe in the butter. A toy giraffe, obviously, not yeah. a real one. Don't have those. Right. Giraffe in the butter and, you know, he's messed up some things. So okay. The elf does come.
That's a brilliant idea.
Yeah.
Little elf that comes and helps out or causes mischief. And he's even got his own little door down there. It's amazing. Hugo must be having a fantastic time. That's yeah. really good. So anyway,
right.
what we did actually have a plan here to talk about stuff and some current events.
Mm-hmm.
And we mentioned the royal family there and the royal wedding that happened in 1981 between Charles and Diana. And yeah. then, of course, we had another, you know, the more recent royal wedding was William and Kate, which was yeah. what, 2000 and something? 2008, 2009, 2010. I don't know. I actually don't remember, but anyway.
I don't know. Yeah, 2000 and at least 10.
I think so. And so that kind of all this is relating to the fact that we're going to have another royal wedding next year.
We are.
And this is between Prince Harry and his girlfriend Meghan Markle.
Mm.
So I thought that since Meghan Markle is going to join the royal family, she's also going to become a British citizen. So I thought we could talk about this and then talk about the royal family a little bit.
Yeah.
Because obviously the royals are famous around the world and a lot of attention is being paid to this story.
Yeah.
Perhaps when it should be, people probably should be paying attention to some of the more important things going on in the world.
I don't think it's an either-or situation.
Really?
Yeah.
So bigger stories like the Brexit negotiation, the investigation of Trump by the FBI, and also rising tension between the USA and North Korea are big stories. But this story has been hitting the headlines a lot.
People want a feel-good story.
They do, yeah. This is a feel-good story.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, because it makes you feel good. Okay, then. So let's talk about this. So who is Meghan Markle, first of all? Do you know who she is?
Yeah, I saw her in Suits. She's an American actress.
Yeah. Did you enjoy Suits?
It was okay.
Yeah.
It is a bit shoddy.
Shoddy?
Not that great.
Okay.
They had this, like, because it's a law program, and they were one of those types of, it's a comedy, like, it's meant to be funny, and it was quite funny, and I enjoyed it. We watched it quite a lot. But they would do that thing where they'd hand them a sort of really complicated, thick dossier, and they'd just like look at it and instantly be like, "Well, I've understood and read it all." And I was like, "How are they doing this?"
Like a real show about a law firm would involve a lot more reading, and a lot less sort of arguing and striding into people's offices and
wearing high heels
and having affairs and stuff like that. Anyway, so she is an actress who played the part of Rachel in Suits. Okay, that's how I guess she's famous. She's an American actress. Her background. Do you know anything about her background?
Her mother's African-American, her father's white. And didn't they win some money or something? And it set her off on a road to sort of fulfilling her dream and becoming an actress? Or didn't they sort of start modestly and some sort of life-changing event happened? Maybe I made that up.
A rags-to-riches story of some kind? I don't actually know. All I know from Wikipedia, the brief bit of reading I did, is that she's of Dutch, English and Irish descent through her father's side. Don't really know about her mum, except that her mum apparently was or is African-American. So she's like mixed race. She was born on the 4th of August 1981 in Los Angeles, so she's American. Describing her parents, she has said, "My dad is Caucasian, meaning white, and my mum is African-American. I have come to embrace this and say who I am, to share where I'm from, to voice my pride in being a strong, confident, mixed-race woman." So it's very much part of her identity that she is a mixed-race person. Mm-hmm. Is it significant? Is that significant in this?
Is it significant?
Yeah, in the context that she's joining the royal family in the UK.
I do think it's significant. I think it's interesting that, you know, Harry's mother-in-law will be black, essentially. I think
is
that's,
she black then? Does that count as black? Because that's an interesting question, don't you think?
Isn't she?
Well, she's half white.
No,
and half
his
black.
Mother-in-law.
Oh, sorry.
So Meghan's mum.
Oh, right, of course.
So that's his mother-in-law.
Yeah.
So that is, you know, a really important, significant person.
Yeah.
And I do think it's important because I think we're going to talk about the royals more, but there is a lack of integration and even
diversity,
especially like in lots of areas of the world. But those upper echelons of society, you know, the creme, I mean, and they're definitely the creme, aren't they?
Creme de la creme.
You know, it's all white, especially in Britain. Yeah. So it's really great, I think, that she's there.
It's quite an interesting question because to an extent it's a bit of a conundrum, isn't it? Because you kind of think, well, the country as a whole is quite diverse now, you know, and that, you know, we've got people from different communities and stuff like that. And the world itself is a diverse place and all that. And yet the royal family doesn't really represent that diversity. But the royal family, that by definition, is this sort of, it's a bloodline, isn't it? And so when you think about it, you realise the fact that it's all about family and the bloodline of the royal family sort of means that by definition, the true royals, I mean, the sort of ones who were born into the royal family, are white in that sense.
But that's also through choice because they've never chosen to marry someone who was not white.
Yeah, why not?
Because, I mean, look at Meghan's and Harry's children. They will be born into the royal family will be to a certain degree. Well, I mean, they will also be mixed race.
Yeah.
This could have happened before. It just hasn't happened before. Yeah. You know, Princess Diana, she was from a posh family, wasn't she? But she wasn't royal. Kate's not royal.
Well, Princess Diana was actually from a noble family, so she did have connections. Kate isn't. She's not actually from a noble background because, you know, you've got the nobility, which is a system of family connections. And if you are connected by family somehow to the royalty, then you're part of the nobility, right? Mm. Diana was from a noble family. Kate wasn't. Like, her parents are sort of middle class who grew up, who made their fortune selling toys or something. I think they sold...
were they wedding planners?
No, it was a gift shop business that Kate Middleton's...
They made money.
They were middle class people who made lots of money.
Yeah.
And which led to Kate being able to get into like the top schools. And they were very ambitious. I think actually Kate's mum had an ambition for Kate that she would marry one of the princes.
That's pretty intense.
It was an ambition. Yeah. And so she almost groomed herself to be in that position.
But I mean, that Kate married William was a big excitement for Britain. I mean, they loved the royal wedding. Kate, you know, she's very beautiful and she's very nice. But she was like everyone, you know, and a commoner, as people were saying, you know, she's not that common.
Technically.
But she's not from the nobility. And so that was exciting. People were saying, you know, the royal family has been shaken up. It's no longer fuddy-duddy and stuffy and just marrying their first cousins. Look, he's married a normal person.
Yeah, bringing the royal family into the 21st century.
So, you know, and Harry's taken it further.
Yeah.
Because she's also foreign.
I think it's she is. She's American.
She's not even English.
Yeah, that's right. You know what? She's American, right? She's divorced.
Yes.
And she comes from a Catholic family, which traditionally would have been a definite no-no.
Yeah.
In fact, she's more the sort of woman that Harry would have had as a mistress rather than married into the royal family.
That's what they say.
Yeah.
But times have changed.
They have. Thank goodness.
Thank goodness, yeah.
Yeah. But there was a scandal years ago with Edward VIII,
mm-hmm.
who wanted to marry, what's his name, Wallis Simpson. And she was a Catholic American divorcee,
mm-hmm.
And that didn't sit very well with the royal family at the time.
Mm.
And he was given a choice: either you marry this woman and you, you know, give up the throne, or you give up her and you marry the throne? No, that doesn't work.
That doesn't work. But, you know, you can stay, you can become king.
Yeah.
Or you can marry this woman.
Because she's, you know, we can't have a divorced Catholic American woman in the royal family. That's what they thought at the time. But now, obviously, things have changed. She was also, I think there were also other things that meant that Wallis Simpson wasn't quite accepted. Like, she didn't get on with the others.
But then it's funny because actually Edward VIII, you know that story. Mm. Now when you talk about it, it sounds like a sort of fantastic love story, doesn't it? You know, he gave up the throne. And actually it's a very undertold story in Britain. It's more sort of like, how could he?
Yeah.
Marry an American.
Naughty boy.
And I think now maybe it's time for a retelling, you know, that story. Because, you know, recently they made the King's Speech.
The King's Speech, yeah, which featured aspects of that story.
It's quite important in terms of that story.
And The Crown.
Yeah, I've not watched The Crown.
Oh, that The Crown goes into that story in quite some detail. So it's quite good.
Well, I mean, I hear it's a really good series, but I think, I mean, so that's an interesting story because I still feel that growing up in England, we know that story about the abdication, but we don't look at it as a lovely love story, you know, a powerful story of love. It's sort of told with this very like, oh dear, that was not right. That wasn't the thing to do.
It was a scandal.
It was a scandal. Whereas I think a modern audience would now be ready for it to be like, wow.
Yeah.
He loved her so much.
What a beautiful romance.
Yeah.
But there's another thing, though, that Wallis Simpson was a Nazi sympathiser.
Yes, I heard that. But wasn't there a number of Nazi sympathisers in the
in the royal family at that time? Yeah, there was all. Though I think Hitler actually expected Britain to kind of go along with what he was doing because he had some support in the higher levels of British establishment.
And you have to be careful when you talk about Nazi sympathizer in the 30s. He'd abdicated in the 30s, the late 30s.
Yeah.
We think of Adolf Hitler, obviously. He is a horrible, awful, perhaps the most awful person in history, certainly modern history. But when he started, there was more sympathy. You know, there wasn't that kind of same...
Yeah, there wasn't the stigma attached to being a fascist, let's say, at the time, that it was almost an acceptable thing, which is something that's happening again now, isn't it?
Terrifying.
It is, isn't it?
Terrifying.
Like being a fascist now is like normalised.
Are you talking about the tweets?
I'm talking about just everything that's going on.
I thought you were talking about the Trump tweet.
I'm talking about Donald Trump tweeting a far right, you know, retweeting a video published by Britain First, which is a far right sort of fascist group
A
hate group in the UK, but also just generally speaking, the stuff that I see on Twitter, any thread which is discussing either Brexit or Trump, it's just a lot of right wing people airing their views on the internet these days, and it's becoming more and more normalized. You saw in Charlottesville in the United States this summer. I don't know how to describe them. White supremacists openly marching through the streets, waving Nazi flags and things like that. And we shouldn't get into it now.
No, get into it. It's a different story and it's terrifying. I completely agree.
Yeah. But
so all of this to say that, it's a complicated story with them. And their potential Hitler supporting, but it was also different times. They definitely should not have been supporting him. He was always a horrible man with horrible opinions from the get-go.
Yeah.
But perhaps not as horrible as people realised.
So but what you're saying is that purely from a sort of story point of view, that the fact that this is quite a romantic story in the sense that he gave up the crown in order to be with this woman is quite a romantic sacrifice to make, and that there is a romantic story to be told there, and that the narrative that we've had in the UK over the years is that he's a bad guy because he abdicated, which is just not the done thing. You should watch The Crown. It does tell that story in some detail in a very convincing way.
I'm gonna give it a watch.
You should. I think series two of The Crown is out now. I think it's just started again.
Good. Okay.
So quite timely. So all right. Also, another thing that I noticed when I was sort of reading about Meghan Markle is that she appears to be anti-Brexit. She tweeted, I think, on the day after the Brexit referendum result came out, she tweeted a photo of someone holding up a sign that said, if EU, it's a kind of a joke,
Yeah.
If EU leave me now, you take away the biggest part of me, which is a song lyric from a song by Chicago.
Yeah.
And if you leave me now, you take away the biggest part of me. And if EU leave me now, you see? See the joke?
I see it.
So that seemed to suggest that she isn't a supporter of Brexit, which I don't know if that is of any significance. Normally the royals don't have political opinions, but she seems like a normal person, let's say.
She does. Although, I mean, I frankly don't give much of a toss about what she has to say. Because there's quite a lot of like videos of her looking sort of starry. And I just think, boring. I'm not interested in what you have to say or anything about you, really.
Really?
No.
She's attractive, though, isn't she? She's good looking.
Well, no surprises.
Yeah.
Do you think Harry was just like, I fancy her? Do you? I mean, it's very hard to turn down like royalty.
Do you reckon?
Yeah.
Do you reckon that she, really?
I think they get on and all the rest of it. But, you know, I mean, if he wasn't royal, he would never have met her, obviously. And what's he got? But, I mean, if you meet the royal person and they're quite cute and you get on and you're thinking, I could be a princess.
She's not going to be a princess, though, you know.
Well, she'll be an HRH.
Her Royal Highness.
Yeah.
Will she? But yes. She technically won't be Princess Meghan.
No, she'll just be a duchess, won't they? And they'll be Sussex, won't they?
She's not going to be a princess because you can't marry into that position. You have to be born into it. Those are the rules.
Princess, no.
Yeah. Princess Diana wasn't actually a princess.
We
just called her a princess.
And then she would have been queen consort.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, the royal consort, which is the person who's married to the monarch.
Well, but I mean, essentially, it's princess.
Basically,
though.
She's a princess.
I mean, she's living in a castle, isn't she?
She's going to be a duchess, right? Duchess
pretty
of...
Pretty cool.
Duchess of Sussex, I think.
Yeah, and she's just going to be swanning around being, you know, fabulous.
Yeah. All right. So what do we think of Meghan Markle then? And we think she's basically all right. Heart sort of seems nice enough.
She seems nice enough.
Yeah.
She seems lovely. I think it's a good choice. And, I mean, globally, the royal family, nonsense.
Yeah, really? You think it's a load of nonsense?
It's embarrassing, I think.
Do you think so? Because a lot of people love our royal family.
I know.
Of people are fascinated and
yeah, and they are fascinating and it's full of tradition. And I mean, I'm quite fascinated, but it's also really awful because they're just normal people. They're just a regular family with loads of privilege and money for absolutely no reason. Mm. We live in a world which is so divided. Britain, really divided. And here it's just like, there we go, you're really wealthy and famous and have all these sort of access to people and things and your opinions being heard for no reason whatsoever.
Yeah, it's just...
And it's... That's not right.
The embodiment of privilege and inequality in society. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, really?
I know, it's nonsense. Would you get rid of them then, if you could? If you could press a button now to just completely remove the royal family, would you do it?
I kind of feel like once the Queen goes... I tried to write a question for you earlier and I wrote, if the Queen dies.
if the Queen dies.
And because I feel she's immortal.
She's not.
I sort of feel when the Queen goes, they should sort of be like, that's nat now, isn't it? Come on. Yeah. We can't really have a king.
No,
it's ridiculous.
They will maintain it. They will keep going.
Of course they will, but it's ridiculous.
I mean, whether or not Charles will be king is another question because he's...
Old
and unpopular.
Very unpopular.
I don't know. I think I've heard mixed things about him. I've heard some people say he seems like a nice guy and an interesting person and with some really interesting things to say. And I've heard other people say that he's a bit strange and not very nice. You know, so... But he's not that popular in the UK. This kind of weird divorcee tainted by the tragedy of his... failed marriage with Diana and the divorce and the affairs.
He wasn't nice to Diana.
He wasn't very nice to her. She said famously that she threw herself down the stairs. Although I don't know if he was involved in that, but he wasn't very nice to her. Yes.
No.
Yeah.
And we all love Diana, you know, Queen of Hearts.
she called herself the Queen of Hearts.
Really? Oh, well, she was mental as well. They were all mental.
To be honest, the least mental people in this family are the ones who apparently aren't really royal. So Kate Middleton seems like a pretty normal, down-to-earth, nice person. Yeah. Meghan Markle, again, same kind of thing. Mm. Prince Harry, don't you think he's the sort of most down-to-earth, normal royal of the bunch, don't you think? He's the one you could go for a drink with, isn't he?
I don't know. Yes, he does seem relatively normal for someone who's like fabulously wealthy and privileged.
Yeah. Have you heard this rumour about Harry?
I don't know.
Have you heard any rumours about Harry? There's a rumour that he's not Prince Charles's son.
Yeah, it's old news.
It's old news, but it's quite a good one. I quite like this story.
Yeah.
It's a sort of a conspiracy theory, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I sort of quite like this one. I think it could be true.
Well, he doesn't look like William, does he?
He doesn't look like William. He doesn't look like Charles. Mm-mm. And you know the guy is, what's his name? James Hewitt.
Yeah.
The guy who apparently is, you know, he's said to be Harry's father. So this dates back to the fact that Diana had a number of different affairs with different people. One of the people she had an affair with was this...
Allegedly.
Princess Diana had an affair with this guy called James Hewitt, who was a polo player, I think.
Yeah, something like that.
And we can work out that the affair took place around the time that Harry was conceived.
Mm-hmm.
And that now you look at Harry, he doesn't, you know, he's got this, you know, certain features, this ginger hair and all this stuff. And he doesn't really look like Charles. And when you see pictures of James Hewitt, he looks a lot like James Hewitt. He really does. James Hewitt's got the same kind of same shaped chin, same shaped ears, the same skin tone.
It's possible.
The same kind of hair, exactly the same color hair. It's really possible.
Yeah.
It really could be true. So, I don't know. It doesn't make any difference
to
anything.
Makes no difference, though.
No difference at all to anything. And obviously, he's not going to have a DNA test because he wouldn't dignify the theory by doing that. But anyway, it's an interesting one.
Mm.
But what I meant was that he seems like quite a normal, down-to-earth person, despite the fact that he's not.
You think it's because of his DNA?
Yeah, his DNA just breathes like normality.
Maybe. Yeah.
All right, so we talked about, you know, things like diversity, social mobility. She's received a lot of... There's been a lot of online abuse.
Has she? Why?
Yeah, because she's like mixed race.
What, and people of Britain have been mean about her?
There's a lot of racist idiots out there.
Well...
You know, like I was saying to you before.
She knew that before she got into it. It's not... That doesn't justify it or make it easier for her to handle, but I'm sure she... You know, she's not a little girl. I'm sure she's experienced online abuse before, and I'm sure she knew that it was not going to be easy. It's disgusting, but
yeah,
people are fools.
Yeah, okay.
I'm sure she's going to get lots of lovely support too.
Yes, I think so. I think she's going to be very popular.
I mean,
you know, apparently she sort of did a meet and greet with the public in Nottingham.
Yeah.
Recently, and she, you know, one of those events where the royals go and shake hands with people and accept flowers.
Get flowers,
and
yeah.
Kiss babies and things. Is that just politicians who kiss
just
babies?
Just politicians. Just American politicians. British politicians wouldn't kiss a baby.
No. Okay.
That would be just frowned on.
Presidents kiss babies.
American presidents.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Anyway, so they met the public and apparently, you know, the public loved her. They adore her and stuff like that. So, fine.
Also, I don't know, in a way it's sort of like a relief because... You kind of think, what could Harry do to, not top William, but you know...
Oh, I think
Kate, she's really beautiful and classic and English, but you know, normal, the rest of it. So Meghan, it's kind of exciting. You know, she's Hollywood and American and sort of beautiful as well.
Yeah.
But it's, you know...
I think that she has stolen Kate's thunder.
Nah.
Really?
No.
Why not?
Because she's American.
All right, she's not like proper...
She can't top Kate, she never will.
Because Kate is...
Kate's top dog.
Kate's the top dog.
Yeah.
Okay. To steal someone's thunder, nice expression. Do you know where that comes from?
No.
It's a theatre thing. That what happened was, I don't know where this happened, but someone invented a kind of thunder special effect for the theatre.
Yeah.
The sound of thunder.
Board. Yeah.
So I don't know how they did it, but they created this special effect of thunder. And someone then stole the idea and then used it to great effect in a performance. So that person literally stole the other one's thunder.
That's amazing.
And so now we use the expression still to mean when you, what?
You sort of eclipse someone's power. You know, you sort of like take the limelight. Oh no, I'm just using more expressions.
To win praise for yourself by preempting someone else's attempt to impress. So let's say, for example, you are doing something that is...
let's say I'm telling a joke.
Yeah.
And it's going pretty well, but then you give the punchline.
And then everyone laughs at my punchline and I'm the wonderful one, yeah. Even though you're the one who set up the joke.
Yeah.
And you were going to get all the applause and the adulation. And instead, by jumping in with the punchline too early, I steal your thunder.
Yes.
Good example. Mm. So I was wondering if Meghan Markle is going to steal Kate's thunder, but you don't think so. You think Kate is untouchable.
I think she's untouchable. And I think she, because she's English and also because she's got, you know, she's got a baby coming, so she's pregnant. Mm. So she'll win that thunder back. When's the baby due?
A couple of months, I think.
So she'll get a bit of... I mean, the wedding will obviously be big.
Yeah.
But there'll be some faux pas, I think, from...
From Meghan.
Yeah.
Because she's American. She doesn't know the rules.
She's going to make mistakes.
Yeah. It's going to be fun to see. I honestly, genuinely hope it works. I hope that the love that they appear to have for each other is genuine. I hope that they get on. I hope the marriage works. I hope that she is happy. And I hope that the public continue to like her.
I think it'll be hard for her.
Yes, I think so too.
I think she could be very unhappy.
Yeah.
I think it depends how low a profile they manage to keep.
You know, Diana was very unhappy as a member of the royal family. She didn't realise...
She was glaringly in the spotlight, though.
Yeah, she was hounded by the press all the time.
Because they were their next in line, and, you know, she's the sort of new young face, and and she also seemed quite shy.
She was extremely naive.
She's very young.
She thought that she was in some sort of fairy tale situation. She thought that Charles loved her. She didn't realise that she'd just been selected by the Queen Mother, I think. This is Diana. That she was just picked by the Queen Mother. And Charles didn't really love her. He loved Camilla. But he married Diana because she was the right... She fitted the right profile for this role.
She did, yeah.
And she believed the whole thing. She thought he was in love with her and all this stuff. He wasn't. You know, she wasn't clued into the whole game that she was a part of. And then, you know, slowly that innocence and that naivety was
stripped away
and
it was a different time for the royal family back then.
You know that she was selected as a virgin. You know, she had to be a virgin for that wedding.
Gosh, awful.
How old fashioned.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, look at Kate. I mean, she's a good girl, but I'm sure she wasn't a virgin.
No, I don't think so.
No.
I don't think Meghan Markle would be either. I would be surprised.
She's divorced.
She's divorced, right.
It's unlikely.
Yeah, it is a virgin. It is unlikely.
And good, God, because I think you need to be a bit tougher to manage all that royal family. Anyway.
Right. Anyway.
Let's go on to the next bit.
So since we're talking about the royal family, we thought that we would just have a bit of fun and do a royal family quiz.
Yes.
Okay, so what we've done, and we're going to quiz each other, but listeners, you can get involved in this too by just trying to guess the answers, all right? If you want to, you can pause. Obviously, you could pause the podcast and try and guess, but I tell you what we're going to do. Aren't we going to do this? We're going to read through our questions,
yeah,
and then we're going to answer them. Isn't that right?
I thought I was going to quiz you and you'll quiz me.
Okay, all right.
It
doesn't matter. Let's just get started. So, okay, you can just give me your questions first. Listeners, do you know the answers to these questions as well? And let's see if I can get them all right.
Yeah. Well, I didn't try to make them too hard for you. I thought there'd be more listener learning.
Okay, very good. Very
good. Okay, because some of these you know, and some of we've already discussed anyway.
Okay.
So I'll just do them anyway. Okay, so I said, what is the Queen's husband known as?
What's the Queen's husband known as? What, you mean like... the official title.
Yes.
Not some of his nicknames. I don't know if he's got many nicknames, has he?
I don't know.
His official title is Prince Philip, the Duke of Edinburgh, the royal consort to the Queen.
Yes.
He's not the King, he's the Duke of Edinburgh.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. He's the Duke of Edinburgh. He cannot be known as the King.
No, he's not the King. Technically, not the King.
Okay, good. All right, then, so he's not the King. And we talked about that a little bit. I also asked who is next in line to the throne.
Who's next in line to the... That's one of my questions as well. So I know the answer very, very well. Who's next in line to the throne? So when the Queen dies, because she will die Not if the Queen dies. Yeah,
which was my original question. If the Queen dies. When?
So when the Queen dies. So after, as it stands at this moment. So I, my question for you on this was, it was, who has to die for Harry to become king? That was the way I put the question.
Oh, shall I tell you?
So who has to die for him to be king?
Charles has to die.
Yes. The queen has to die.
Charles has to die because he's next in line to the throne.
Yeah.
Then William has to die. And then George and Charlotte.
Yes.
Have to both die. And potentially their new baby will also have to die. And then Harry can take the throne.
Right. That's right. And you know, after Harry... if Harry got killed in this, I don't know, helicopter accident or whatever it is that's going to be whatever tragedy would befall the royal family. If Harry died as well, it would go to Prince Andrew.
Yes, and blimey,
If Prince Andrew was also killed, because I'm saying they're all getting killed, not just dying, that they're accidentally...
Someone's targeting.
Then it would go to Princess Beatrice and then Princess Eugenie, the two most useless.
And Eugenie. Oh my God.
What do they do?
They wear bad clothes.
They wear bad hats to weddings.
Bad hats and shoes. Oh God. All right then. Well, that's good to know. Let's hope nothing befalls the royal family, despite everything I said earlier.
Yes.
All right then. So we've got that. Next question. He's known as Prince Harry. Mm-hmm. But what is his real name?
Henry.
Yes. Do you know his full name?
Henry Windsor of something. Just Henry Windsor, the Prince of... I don't know. Sorry.
Well, it's Henry Charles Albert David.
Henry Charles Albert David Windsor.
Yeah.
You know Windsor? It's just a made-up
name.
Don't you talk about it.
It's one of my questions.
Okay, next question.
I've just done it myself. I said name Kate and William's two children.
Kate and William's two children. So there's George and Charlotte.
Yes, well done.
And another one on the way. We don't know. We don't know yet to be identified. Is it a boy or a girl?
They've not said.
Okay.
True or false? Is a few.
False.
True or false? The Queen has two birthdays.
True. She has two birthdays. There's her real birthday, which is when she was born. And then there's the official birthday, which is like a public celebration, which always takes place when the weather is probably good.
Yes, it's in June, I think. They try and do it on a sunny day.
Yeah.
Okay,
next.
True or false, you're not allowed to touch the royal family.
You're not allowed to touch the royal family. Oh, it's got to be false. I think you're not... It's not really... it's not considered appropriate to touch the Queen. So I remember once the Australian Prime Minister, don't remember his name, but the Prime Minister of Australia, when he met the Queen, he put his arm around the Queen. Because like Aussies, you know, they're quite
friendly.
They're quite friendly.
They're friendly.
Quite friendly and quite informal. Like, g'day Queenie, g'day Lizzie, how you going? Mm. And he put his arm around her, and I think that was like a big no-no. It was a bit of a scandal.
Well, technically, you're not supposed to touch the royal family.
Any of them.
You're not supposed to touch them, no. But it is... yes, he touched her, and so did Michelle Obama.
Yes,
she touched the Queen.
Really? Where do you know? Where do you know where she touched her?
I think she touched her arm. Just she gave her a shake, shook her hand, or something. You know, some sort of warm American touching. And you're not meant to. You're not meant to touch them.
Why not?
They're special.
You might break them.
Yeah, you might. You know, you might break them. Okay. The Queen speaks a foreign language fluently. What is it?
It's French.
It is French.
Yeah, she's fluent
in
French.
I've heard her speak French.
And?
It was very cute.
Really? Yeah. Is she good?
Yeah, I think she spoke to Hollande. There's a little snippet because he didn't speak English.
No. François Hollande, the former French Prime Minister. President. What does he say? Be you. Do what we you do.
We do.
You, what you want to do.
Do. Yeah, it's okay. Terrible. Terrible.
You can be do what you want to do. That's it.
Poor old Francois.
Yeah.
So that's the Queen. What famous boarding school do the royal children go to? Only if they're boys.
Eton.
Yes, that's right. Eton.
Okay.
What's that famous expression about Eton?
I don't know.
Oh, I can't remember. Isn't it, you know, the future of Britain is decided on the playing fields of Eton?
Ah.
Something like that.
Sounds like it. Yeah.
Because all the sort of top brass, you know, all the top people, they go to Eton, which is this sort of very old fashioned, it's in Windsor. Just around the corner.
Extremely exclusive.
Expensive.
Very expensive school. Ironically called a public school, but they're not really like public schools as you'd expect.
All private schools are called public schools.
Are they?
Yeah.
Are they? Really?
Yeah, you say public school. Every private school is called public. I don't know why it's like that in England. But I mean, like Harrow is a, you say it's a public school.
Yes.
Meaning it's a private school.
Yes, I know. But you know, not all private schools are called public schools. Because like some schools are private schools. You have to, you know, pay to get in and there's an entry exam. But they're not like public schools. Because the public schools are the super
posh ones.
Posh ones.
Yes.
Like Eton and Harrow.
Rugby.
Where they, a rugby school is another one. Yeah, and others. So that, anyway, so they all go to Eton School along with people like David Cameron and Boris Johnson and stuff.
Most
like that.
Of the cabinet, yeah, essentially. Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of that. Okay, we touched on it. I said, what is the surname of the royal family?
It's Windsor. Yeah.
Yes, it's Mountbatten Windsor.
Mountbatten Windsor,
apparently.
Okay.
Which they just made up, didn't they?
Yeah. Do you know the story?
Not really.
So, First World War. So. The royal family as it is now is actually mostly German.
Mm.
They're mostly German. Like Prince Albert was German. A lot of Victoria's family came from Germany. It's like a really heavily German family. Prince Philip is actually Greek.
Greek, yeah.
And so they used to have this German name. And then in World War One, it was a bit awkward to have a royal family with a German name.
Yeah.
And so they changed their name to Windsor.
Because they were the House of Windsor, weren't they?
Right.
Already.
Yeah, I suppose so.
They didn't pluck it out the air.
It's incredibly complicated and strange.
Yeah.
All of this stuff, it is. But anyway, they changed their name during World War One because it didn't really fit right, didn't sit very right to have a royal family that had a German name while we were fighting against the Germans.
But didn't they for a long time not really need a surname? Should have just been Elizabeth.
Elizabeth Regina.
Yeah, just like, you know, like Madonna. Just one name.
Yeah.
Kylie.
The Queen.
The Queen, yeah. All right then. History. I've delved into history, but not far history. I just thought I'd have one. Henry the Eighth is famous for having had 6 wives.
Mm-hmm.
At school, how do you remember the fate of his wives?
There's a little rhyme that you can do.
Yes.
Divorced, beheaded, died. Divorced, beheaded, survived.
Good, yes. And do you know any of the actual names of the wives?
No, well, there's famously Anne Boleyn.
Yes.
Catherine of Aragon.
Mm-hmm.
Jane Seymour.
Yeah.
Anne of Cleves.
Yes.
Someone else.
Catherine Howard and Catherine Parr. Well done.
One of them... Divorced, beheaded, died. Divorced, beheaded, survived. Was it Anne Boleyn who survived?
No.
Who survived?
Because Anne Boleyn had her head cut off.
Oh, she was beheaded.
Yeah.
Had her head chopped off.
Seymour dies. Divorced, beheaded. Catherine Parr survives.
Okay, right.
Yes.
Yeah, and complicated story. Basically, he was looking for a son, a male heir to the throne.
Yeah.
And a bit picky, wasn't he, Henry VIII?
He was.
Mm. Okay, that's another story for another time.
Another story for another time. I had one, but we already talked about it, about Edward VIII.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Abdicated or at least turned down the throne in favour of marrying an American divorce.
Because we wouldn't have had Elizabeth if it wasn't for that.
That's right. Because
longest reigning monarch.
Yeah. Extremely successful, hugely popular monarch, Queen Elizabeth.
Yeah.
But yeah, it would have been someone else because Edward's brother Bertie, who was known as George the VI, became king, and obviously his daughter was Queen Elizabeth. Became Queen Elizabeth.
Interesting, isn't it?
Mm.
Okay, and my last question to you are: where? So you know, the Queen, she's got lots of lovely jewellery known as the crown jewels. Yeah. Where are they kept?
The crown jewels are kept in the Tower of London, which is in London.
Yeah.
And it's like a medieval castle built by William the Conqueror, I understand.
Right.
Yeah, it's been in the royal family for, you know, 1,000 years about that. And yeah, this fantastic tourist destination now where you can go and get a tour of the castle, because it's basically a castle by beef eaters. Yeah. Who are the sort of guardians of the castle. A very popular tourist destination. And yes, the crown jewels can be seen in the Tower of London. Yeah.
Mm.
Including a huge diamond, like maybe the
Have
biggest.
Have you been? Have you been to Tower of London?
I went as a kid. I don't really remember, but I did go as a child. I think it's quite a good thing to do. I think some of those beefeaters are quite entertaining.
Are they beefeaters, or are they called the yeomen?
Yeoman of the guard.
The yeoman of the guard.
I think they are technically yeomen of the guard, but their nickname is beefeaters.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah. Interesting place, the Tower of London. Fascinating place, because it was a prison, wasn't it?
It was a prison.
And did you know at one time? The Tower of London was surrounded by a moat of water, and they had animals in the moat. They had polar bears in the moat.
Polar bears. Yeah. I'm sure they didn't last long.
I'm sure they didn't. But can you imagine that?
Weird.
A time when there would have been polar bears swimming around in the moat around.
That's just weird.
Around the Tower of London, yeah.
You'd imagine they'd get out and terrorise London.
Yeah, I think they were chained up or something.
Poor old bears.
Yeah, animals were so mistreated in the past, weren't they?
They're still mistreated.
They still are.
I watched this terrible document. No, after I listened to the podcast with, what's his name? Adam Buxton.
Yes.
With Simon.
Simon Amstel.
Yeah, I watched Carnage, his sort of mockumentary film sort of thing. It was disturbing.
So this is a comedian from the UK who is campaigning against the mistreatment of animals.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it's very disturbing the way animals are treated.
Terrible.
Around the world. Yeah, it is. Ricky Gervais is someone who campaigns for that cause.
Does he?
Yeah. So those are your questions?
Those are my questions.
I did all right, actually.
You did very well. I wasn't trying to trick you.
No.
I was trying to kind of like spread, like everyone, I thought people in the podcast that might be listening might find it interesting.
Very useful. No, I think that's very good information that most people should know.
It's like most British people do know.
Yeah.
Whereas most maybe foreign people don't know.
Right. Okay,
like
well, here's my quiz. Yeah, Meghan Markle should listen to this podcast. She might pick up a few things, a few tips, bits of general knowledge. So here are my questions. Some of them are the same as yours,
yeah,
so I'll skip
I'm not
those
surprised.
Ones. So I'm going to start with a sort of financial question.
Okay.
I'd like you to guess, how much do you think it costs the UK taxpayer per year on average to maintain the royal family? How much does it cost each individual taxpayer per year? So how much does Joe Bloggs have to
pay
in tax for the royal family a year? What do you think?
I don't know, because they do have some of their own income, don't they?
Yeah.
So they do make money, the royal family, and they've got lots of assets and stuff, which I suppose are separate. I don't know, a year, how much do you pay for the royal family? A quid?
A quid, do you think?
A pound.
£1.
£1.
It's actually, on in 2016, it was about 66p.
It wasn't far off.
Not far off. Yeah, not far off at all. So less than a pound, 66 pence is what
we all pay for this family.
Each individual person pays per year for the family.
That's disgusting.
What, disgusting? Well, cheap?
No, that's disgusting, because I wonder how much do we all pay if we could say, I'd like my 66p to go to the royal family or the NHS.
Right.
How much do we pay to the NHS? 0.01p?
Mm.
66p per person in the whole country, 60-odd million people.
Mm.
That's disgusting. For one family, for no reason whatsoever.
So, depends how you look at it, doesn't it? Because you could
Well, let's say we wanted to just keep the upkeep. If we wanted these to be tourist destinations, like Versailles is a tourist destination.
Like Buckingham Palace could just be an open tourist destination throughout the year,
yeah.
For example.
Or
yeah.
All of the palaces, you know, Balmoral, Windsor, all of that nonsense.
Mm.
And the royal collection and all that. Sure, there might be an upkeep that the British people would be prepared to pay, but a lot more money would come in from people visiting. It'd probably be a bit more self-sustaining.
Is it all about money, though? Is that the most important thing? Because for some people, this figurehead of sovereignty is more important than the financial benefit of having or not having them. That somehow there is a sort of
an identity.
Something about the identity, something about, the national sovereignty, which supersedes the financial things. I think a lot of people care about that
stuff
a lot. And you know, you only need to see from Brexit that people are quite willing to just tank the economy just for some sense of national sovereignty.
Yep.
Not even the EU isn't even a threat to national sovereignty. It's stupid.
Isn't. I know.
Anyway,
let's not go there. Let's not go back to Brexit.
Yeah.
All right then.
I'll talk to my dad about that.
66p. That's still quite a lot of money.
66p per year. So I can tell you about. Do you know where the royals get their money from? And there are two or three sources of income.
Isn't it rent? Don't they own all the land?
Yeah, they own a lot of land.
They own London for a start.
There's several things. It's a little bit confusing, but the first one is the sovereign grant. So this is the money that comes from the Treasury. Mm. The Treasury, of course, being all the money that the government takes in from taxation. So that the sovereign grant comes from the tax payer, that's the Treasury. Mm. It's about 15% of the profits made by the Crown Estate. The Crown Estate basically means money made from all the properties owned by the Queen. I'm not sure how the money comes in. It's probably rent, ground rent, entry fees for visitors and stuff like that. But all that money goes to the government, and the government then, 2 years later, pays the royal family 15% of what it took.
Okay.
All right. So that's the sovereign grant. Then there's the privy purse. Privy purse, which is basically all the profits from all the land and assets that have been owned by the royal family for generations. I don't really understand the difference between that and the previous one, but anyway. So residential, commercial, agricultural properties. So a lot, you know, the royals own a lot of farmland, which is actively being farmed. So they take all the profits from all of that farming and stuff, okay? It's about 184 square kilometres of land. And so that goes into what's called the privy purse, which is basically the profits from all that land. Between 2015 and 2016, that was about £17.8 million. Okay, and that pays for expenses incurred by other members of the family. So Eugenie and Beatrice with the stupid hats, they get paid out of this private...
17 million?
About 17.8 million is the...
It's not as much as I thought, actually.
No, then the Queen is actually not... She's not one of the richest people in the country anymore.
No, I suppose not.
And then there's the private savings and private ownership that the Queen has. She owns properties herself, which she inherited from her father, including Balmoral Castle in Scotland. And she has apparently a large art collection. The whole thing is worth about £340 million. So the Queen as an individual is worth about £340 million, which is not even in the top 100 most rich people in the country. I think Paul McCartney's richer than the Queen.
Yeah.
Mm. So there you go. That's where the money comes from.
That's where the money comes from.
I don't really understand it either. But
don't really understand,
that's fine. My next question is, who was Edward VIII and what did he do? We've already done that.
We talked about that, yeah.
How many monarchs can you name from the Queen back? Let's see if you can go from the Queen to Queen Victoria.
No.
No?
No, I can't.
Well, you've got the Queen. And before that? The King's Speech.
King George the Sixth.
George the Sixth, Colin Firth.
Firth, yeah.
Before that? It's not rocket science.
I don't know.
George the Fifth.
Jesus, I don't know. I honestly have no idea.
It's George the Fifth.
No, I mean, I trust you. But I can't go. It goes
Elizabeth the Second, George the Sixth. Oh, sorry, my mistake. Obviously, Edward the Eighth. Because he was king for about...
A minute,
yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Before he abdicated. So George the Sixth, Edward the Eighth, and then George the Fifth, that's their dad, and then Edward the Seventh, who was the son of Queen Victoria.
Okay.
So it goes Queen Victoria, Edward the Seventh, George the Fifth, Edward the Eighth, George the Sixth, then Queen Elizabeth.
I like the way the men are really forgettable. It's just like, man, was king, lady. I mean, the queens are much better.
Yeah, Queen Elizabeth I was a pretty formidable person, wasn't she?
Yeah.
And Victoria. Bloody
come
hell.
On. Right, scary
wow.
women.
Wow. Okay, moving on. So, we've done the who has to die for Harry to take the throne. We've done that.
We dealt with that.
Which living royals in the nuclear family, meaning the Queen and her children, which ones are divorced? And did they have affairs?
Well, did they have affairs? I don't know.
Okay, but are they, which ones are divorced?
Well, Andrew, he's divorced because he was married to Fergie.
That's Charles's brother, Andrew, yeah. Prince Andrew.
I mean, Charles is divorced,
obviously. Charles is divorced, yeah. Princess Anne.
Princess Anne.
She's also divorced.
Princess Margaret, she's not divorced.
Princess Margaret is, she's still alive. The Queen's sister, that's Princess Margaret. So the Queen's children are Charles, Princess Anne, Prince Andrew and Prince Edward. Mm. And all of them except Edward are divorced.
Blimey.
Edward is still happily married, apparently.
Well done, Edward.
Yeah. So in terms of affairs, I think they all had affairs, I think. Charles had an affair, obviously, as we know, with Camilla Parker Bowles, who he's now married to.
Yeah.
Anne, I think, had... I don't think she did, but I think her husband did. Andrew had an affair, I think. Or Sarah Ferguson, who... Andrew was married to, remember, long ginger hair.
Everyone remembers Fergie.
Yeah, Fergie. She had an affair, and Princess Diana, of course, had several affairs as well. Next question. Which royal was once given a toe job? Do you know what a toe job is?
Yeah.
Can you explain what a toe job is? Like a blow job, but on the toe.
Yeah.
There, I did it.
It's a toe sucking.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, a toe job. So, which royal
was it, Andrew?
Was once given a toe job? It wasn't Andrew. It was Sarah Ferguson.
Oh,
she had an affair. Fergie. Yeah, she had.
I do remember it in the Sun newspaper. Yeah, the toe job.
Toe job. Yeah,
that's disgusting. Why did you bring that up? Horrible.
Sorry, I just thought it was funny. She had an affair with some rich American guy, and some paparazzi photographer managed to take a photo of what looked like him and her next to a swimming pool, and he appeared to be sucking on one of her toes. I think, to be honest, it looked more like he was kissing the insole of her foot.
Sounds much nicer than a bit toe nicer, job.
But it appeared from the photograph that he was... having a go at one of the toes.
Sounds gross.
It's disgusting, isn't it? What gives the monarch his or her power? So what gives the queen her power?
The people.
No.
She sucks in the power and then it comes out of her eyes like lasers.
She's like... She's like some sort of power vampire, sucking, like, you know, all these people who disappear in Buckingham Palace and they get sort of like absorbed into the queen in some ceremony, and then she shoots. She's like the emperor from Star Wars or something.
What gives her a power? No, I've got no idea.
It's a covenant with God. She has a
covenant with God.
She has a covenant with God.
Nice. I thought that the power was limited since Magna Carta.
Yeah, quite possibly. Yeah. Well, it is limited, but I think she still has a covenant with God. I think what happened with Magna Carta, which was basically like a constitution which limited the powers of the monarch. I think Magna Carta, I think probably the king was like, God, listen, I might not be able to see you as much as I used to. Just because, well, something's come up, this Magna Carta thing. So, sorry, but, you know, I can't really see, we can't hang out anymore.
So she's still a divine monarch, is that?
She has a covenant with God. She thinks she has a divine connection or some sort of agreement with the divine, which gives her power. Jeremy Paxman, the broadcaster who wrote a book about the royals, he thinks... that she really believes that she has a covenant with God. That she really thinks
she comes from another time. It's possible.
Yeah, that it's a divine mandate.
Okay, so she gets the power from God. I suppose Magna Carta is just about limiting their earthly powers.
Yeah exactly.
Have you
seen Monty Python and the Holy Grail?
Yeah.
King Arthur, the story of King Arthur. In that one, he describes the myth of Excalibur.
Yeah.
The Lady of the Lake.
Yeah.
Who... you know, lifted this sword from the water, signifying by divine providence that he would be king of the Britons. And what is it? What's the thing? It's like, just because some moistened bint in a lake threw a sword at you doesn't mean that you get supreme executive power over the masses. Anyway, you have to see the film.
Oh, how'd you do?
How'd you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, king of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What? I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings.
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake, her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite, held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds, distributing swords, is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
Oh, but you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
Oh, but if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help, help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
You have to see the film.
Bint.
What would happen if the Queen murdered someone? Like, let's say one day, I don't know, Donald Trump rocks up at the
it would be complicated. She's not above the law, though.
Isn't she?
No.
Isn't she?
No, she isn't.
I read that she can't be prosecuted.
I think that this is a philosophical debate that people have about where her power ends and if she's above the law. And I think there is some sort of complex loophole which kind of goes both ways. Like, yes, she's the law is applicable to her, and at the same time she can't be persecuted or
so she's
prosecuted.
She's above the law except when she's under it.
Yeah, some sort of thing like that. But I think that laws do apply to her.
Really? She doesn't need a passport, you know.
Or a driving license.
Yeah. True or false?
Yep.
The Queen has her own poet. She's got her own
she's
poet.
She's got a poet laureate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
True.
True.
The poet laureate is officially the poet
the royal,
to the royal poet.
Yeah.
And do you know how the poet laureate is paid?
No.
In sherry.
In sherry?
Sherry is a kind of wine. It's like
that
a
is amazing.
Fortified wine. I think the poet laureate gets some money, but also is given a barrel of sherry. The Queen, here we go, talking about the Queen's powers. The Queen can fly planes. Not actually fly. The Queen can fly and regularly pilots her own helicopters and light aircraft. Her favourite is a Harrier jump jet, which she sometimes flies over Dartmoor, where she enjoys blowing up deer. The part that... Okay, true or false?
Is that a true or false? I don't think she blows up deer, but I think she can fly.
No.
She never learned to fly?
No.
I don't think she would. I think it's too unsafe.
Yeah.
Because she could die.
Right.
But it wouldn't surprise me if she knows how.
False. She can't fly. She doesn't fly a helicopter or she doesn't fly a Harrier jump jet.
She doesn't blow up deer.
She doesn't blow up deer.
She does kill things,
she does kill animals.
Yeah. All posh people do.
Yeah, they like shooting animals, don't they?
They do. Or hunting them.
Yeah. Next. By law, all pubs in the UK must display a picture of the Queen somewhere behind the bar.
I don't think that's the law, but I wish it was.
It's false. Yeah, not true. The Queen and Winston Churchill once had an affair.
No.
False, of course.
Absolute nonsense.
True or false? The Queen doesn't really like Scottish people.
False.
False.
She loves Scottish people.
She loves Scotland. She loves it. True or false? The Queen smokes cigarettes.
False.
False, yeah. There's a rumour that she does, but she totally doesn't.
No way. No.
True or false? The Queen smokes pot, weed, ganja, marijuana.
No.
No. Well, we don't know, actually.
We don't know, but it seems unlikely.
Probably false. But Queen Victoria used to use cannabis.
To ease her period pains.
That's right. That's what I heard, too.
Yes,
I don't know if that's a myth or not, but apparently she used to use cannabis to help with her period pains.
Yeah.
But that's back in the Victorian times when it was totally
they
legal.
They were crazy, those Victorians.
I think it was legal.
All sorts of stuff.
It was legal at that time.
Well, weren't they all doing heroin?
Cocaine and heroin. Everyone was on cocaine and heroin in the
90s. They knew how to live, Victorians. Yeah.
If you went to the dentist would be like, right, just take a line, snort a line of that before I work on your teeth. It'll take the edge off the pain, yeah.
For the NHS.
Yes, that's right. True or false, the Queen owns all of the dolphins which swim in British waters. If a dolphin enters British waters...
She owns all the swans.
If a dolphin swims into British waters, or a whale, it becomes officially within the dominion of the Queen.
That sounds about right. She owns the swans. I reckon she owns the dolphins as well.
It's true. She also owns the swans that swim on the River Thames.
And the royal parks.
Yeah. True or false? The Queen writes the laws of the land. So she writes all of the law in the UK.
Well, doesn't she have to agree it? Doesn't she need to sign off?
Yeah, she doesn't write it, though.
No.
She gives it the royal assent, which is basically like a stamp, like, okay, carry on.
That law's accepted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So at the end of the process, there is an official stamping of the law, which is the royal assent. But she doesn't write anything. And she's never not given royal assent. In fact, the last time that happened, the last time the monarch refused to accept the law...
She should have said no to Brexit.
She should have done. Yeah.
She might still do it.
Oh, I don't know. I don't think she will. Imagine if the Queen stepped in, right, I've had enough of this.
She could do. I mean, she's right at the end. She'd just be like, right, you lot. 90 years.
Right, you fuckers.
I've been Queen, which has been Queen 70-odd years.
My doctor says I've got a week to live.
Brexit, forget about it. You fools.
If it's the last thing I do... Right. So the Queen is in charge of the government, including the Prime Minister.
Yes.
Maybe.
Well, she's the head of government.
She is, yeah. Technically, she invites...
She doesn't have any power.
No, she doesn't. She. It's purely a formality, but she invites the government. She invites them to form a government on her behalf.
Yes.
So if technically Parliament works on behalf of the Queen, but really the Queen doesn't really have any say over that stuff. The Queen's powers, again, include visa-free travel, veto, like the refusal of laws, and invisibility.
Invincibility?
Invisibility.
Invisibility.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
True.
Invisibility.
Well, obviously not totally true. She does have visa-free travel. She can veto laws, but no, she doesn't have invisibility, as far as we know.
Not invisible.
Yes.
Okay. Good to know.
Which member of the royal family talks to trees and believes in...
Charles.
Believes in homeopathy.
Charles, yes. Prince Charles.
Do you know what?
Very eco, isn't he?
Yeah, he's very much into organic food and stuff, which is fair enough.
Yeah.
Not sure about the homeopathy, though. Do you know what homeopathy is?
Yeah.
Can you explain it in a nutshell?
It's sort of when you take medicine, but it's diluted massively down into water to the point that it's just water.
Because they believe that water has a memory,
yes.
You see. And the way it works is if you... The medicine is dilute. One drop of the medicine is diluted into water, into like a liter of water. And one drop of that liter is diluted into another liter of water. Then one drop of that water is diluted into more water, all the way to the point where there are literally trace levels of the original solution. And because water has magical memory, it somehow remembers the qualities of the original thing that you put into the water, which I think is like... The thing that gives you the disease in the first place, and it's just diluted down. I don't know.
Anyway,
sounds like a load of nonsense.
Well, it's just placebo, I suppose.
Yeah, placebo effect. That's it.
Those are your questions.
Those are my questions.
Hold on. I think we need to finish with one more question for the listeners.
Yeah.
What does the Queen do every Christmas?
Ah, so every Christmas, the Queen does a speech to the whole nation, and it's broadcast on television, the Queen's speech.
3 o'clock.
3 p.m. So generally people will be sitting around, probably quite drunk by that point, full of turkey, no doubt. And it's you put the Queen's speech on, and what happens? What does she talk about?
People of Britain. She sort of addresses the nation, and then she sometimes attempts a smile at the end, which is a terrifying, terrifying thing to behold. She just gives a very sort of uncomfortable address.
She talks about, this year the armed forces have been working to do numerous charitable things and that kind of stuff, isn't it?
Yes, it's nonsense. I don't ever recall the contents of her speech. It just looks very uncomfortable. She definitely looks like she'd rather be anywhere else. Yeah. But it's kind of a tradition.
Yeah.
You watch this Queen's speech.
Put the Queen's speech on.
Pop
the Queen's speech on. I might play a little bit of the Queen's speech at the end of this episode.
Good idea.
Could be nice. The last year's Queen's speech.
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
Okay. All right then. Well, that's good. Well, I need to go now.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. Thank you, Amber, for talking to us about Meghan Markle and the royal family and all that stuff. Listeners, I hope that you've picked up a thing or two, that you understand what, you know, we think about the royals. I think that we're probably fairly ordinary Brits, aren't we?
Yes. I think of our demographic, I think most people think in a similar way, that the royals are fascinating, traditional, a bit of a waste of money.
But I'm not sure I'd get rid of them, I have to say. I just don't know if I know that it would save money. We could put that money into the NHS and stuff like that.
Well, but then we can't trust them, can we? They wouldn't put the money into the NHS. No, they'd just do something ridiculous with it. So maybe they are good. I mean, they certainly have a platform. And William and Harry seem all right.
I'm sort of okay with it. I'm not like a big fan, but I just don't know what it would be like
without them. England would have literally nothing. Bad weather.
Yeah.
There'd be nothing left. It'd be stripped of everything. They've barely got any traditions as it goes.
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe we need them.
All right, then. Well, listeners, let me know what you think in the comments section as usual. Amber, thank you very much again for being on the podcast.
You are very welcome. It was brilliant being here on the podcast.
Yeah, okay. All right.
All right, then.
Thanks, everyone.
Okay, then.
Cheers.
Bye.
At this time of year, few sights evoke more feelings of cheer and goodwill than the twinkling lights of a Christmas tree. The popularity of a tree at Christmas is due in part to my great-great-grandparents, Queen Victoria and Prince Albert. After this touching picture was published, many families wanted a Christmas tree of their own, and the custom soon spread. In 1949, I spent Christmas in Malta as a newly married naval wife. We have returned to that island over the years, including last month for a meeting of Commonwealth leaders. And this year, I met another group of leaders, the Queen's Young Leaders, an inspirational group, each of them a symbol of hope in their own Commonwealth communities. Gathering round the tree gives us a chance to think about the year ahead. I'm looking forward to a busy 2016, though I have been warned I may have happy birthdays sung to me more than once or twice. It also allows us to reflect on the year that has passed, as we think of those who are far away or no longer with us. Many people say the first Christmas after losing a loved one is particularly hard. But it's also a time to remember all that we have to be thankful for. It is true that the world has had to confront moments of darkness this year. But the Gospel of John contains a verse of great hope, often read at Christmas carol services. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. One cause for thankfulness this summer was marking 70 years since the end of the Second World War. On VJ Day, we honoured the remaining veterans of that terrible conflict in the Far East, as well as remembering the thousands who never returned. The procession from Horse Guards Parade to Westminster Abbey must have been one of the slowest ever, because so many people wanted to say thank you to them. At the end of that war, the people of Oslo began sending an annual gift of a Christmas tree for Trafalgar Square. It has 500 light bulbs and is enjoyed not just by Christians, but by people of all faiths and of none. At the very top sits a bright star to represent the Star of Bethlehem. The custom of topping a tree also goes back to Prince Albert's time. For his family's tree, he chose an angel, helping to remind us that the focus of the Christmas story is on one particular family. For Joseph and Mary, the circumstances of Jesus' birth in a stable were far from ideal. But worse was to come as the family was forced to flee the country. It is no surprise that such a human story still captures our imagination and continues to inspire all of us who are Christians the world over. Despite being displaced and persecuted throughout his short life, Christ's unchanging message was not one of revenge or violence, but simply that we should love one another. Although it is not an easy message to follow, we shouldn't be discouraged. Rather, it inspires us to try harder, to be thankful for the people who bring love and happiness into our own lives, and to look for ways of spreading that love to others, whenever and wherever we can. One of the joys of living a long life is watching one's children, then grandchildren, then great-grandchildren, help decorate the Christmas tree. And this year, my family has a new member to join in the fun. The customary decorations have changed little in the years since that picture of Victoria and Albert's tree first appeared, although, of course, electric lights have replaced the candles. There's an old saying that it is better to light a candle than curse the darkness. There are millions of people lighting candles of hope in our world today. Christmas is a good time to be thankful for them and for all that brings light to our lives. I wish you a very happy Christmas.
So what you just heard there was the Queen's speech from 2015. So not actually last year's speech, but the year before last. And that was actually the Queen's voice. Have you ever heard her speak before? I wonder. Well, that's what she sounds like. She speaks in a heightened RP, heightened received pronunciation, or as some people might say, very posh English. I don't know if you can recognise that, but to me, it's unmistakable. For you, it might just sound like clear speech, and she does speak very clearly. But for me, there are certain features of her voice that are a dead giveaway that this person is really posh. And honestly, this kind of posh accent isn't really how most people speak. For example, my dad and I speak clearly. My mum, my dad and me and my brother, we speak clearly, but we don't have this kind of posh accent. Every now and then, I will hear someone speaking with this kind of accent, and it's a sign that they come from an upper-class background. There's a lot more for me to say about this subject, and I do intend to explore it further in later episodes. But anyway, I thought you might find it interesting to actually listen to the Queen. So thank you very much for listening to this episode. I look forward to reading your responses in the comments section. Have a great day, morning, afternoon, evening, or night. And if you are celebrating Christmas this year, I hope that you're starting to get into the Christmas spirit now. And by the way, you might be wondering about the baby, because you know that my wife is due to give birth sort of at any time. We're in the drop zone, but the baby hasn't arrived yet, but it could be any day now. I don't know how that will affect the podcast, but if there are no new episodes for a week or two, then that's why. I think I should be able to record something for you after the baby's born, you know, in the sort of weeks after the birth. I should be able to take the time to record something quickly. So I don't think that there will be a big delay. But anyway, if you don't hear from me for a bit, then it's probably because I'm changing nappies and I'm dealing with visiting family members, and probably I'll be in a generally sleep-deprived condition. If you don't hear from me, then that's what's happened, okay? All right then, thank you very much for listening to the episode, and I will speak to you soon, I hope. But for now, goodbye. Bye. 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 Bye.
Thanks for listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.